Abby's fingers fumbled at the sack, but then she remembered herself and curtsied. Thank you for seeing me, Wizard Zorander. It is of vital importance that I have your help. As I've already told you, the lives of innocent children are at stake. Wizard Zorander finally peered up. After appraising her a long moment, he straightened. Where does the line lie? Abby glanced to the sorceress on one side of her, and then the mother confessor on the other side. Neither looked back. Excuse me, Wizard Zorander? The line? The wizard's brow drew down. You imply a higher value to a life because of a young age. The line, my dear child, across which the value of life becomes petty. Where is the line? But a child... He held up a cautionary finger. Do not think to play on my emotions by plying me with the value of the life of a child as if a higher value can be placed on life because of age. When is life worth less? Where is the line? At what age? Who decides? All life is of value. Dead is dead, no matter the age. Don't think to produce a suspension of my reason with a callous, calculated twisting of emotion, like some slippery office holder stirring the passions of a mindless mob. Abby was struck speechless by such an admonition. The wizard turned his attention to the mother confessor. Speaking of bureaucrats, what did the council have to say for themselves? The mother confessor clasped her hands and sighed, I told them your words. Simply put, they didn't care. They wanted done. He grunted his discontent. Do they now? His hazel eyes turned to Abby. Seems the council doesn't care about the lives of even children. When the children are Darren. He wiped a hand across his tired-looking eyes. I can't say I don't comprehend their reasoning or that I disagree with them, but dear spirits, they are not the ones to do it. It is not by their hand, it will be by mine. I understand, Zed, the mother confessor murmured. Once again, he seemed to notice Abby standing before him. He considered her as if pondering some profound notion. It made her fidget. He held out his hand and waggled his fingers. Let me see it, then. Abby stepped closer to the table as she reached in her sack. If you cannot be persuaded to help innocent people, then maybe this will mean something more to you. She drew her mother's skull from the sack and placed it in the wizard's upturned palm. It is a debt of bones. I declare it to you. One eyebrow lifted. It is customary to bring only a tiny fragment of bone, child. Abby felt her face flush. I didn't know, she stammered. I wanted to be sure there was enough to test, to be sure you would believe me. He smoothed a gentle hand over the top of the skull. A piece smaller than a grain of sand is enough. He watched Abby's eyes. Didn't your mother tell you? Abby shook her head. She said only that it was a debt passed to you from your father. She said the debt must be paid if it was called due. Indeed it must, he whispered. Even as he spoke, his hand was gliding back and forth over the skull. The bone was dull and stained by the dirt from which Abby had pulled it. Not at all the pristine white she had fancied it would be. It had horrified her to have to uncover her mother's bones, but the alternative horrified her more. Beneath the wizard's fingers, the bone of the skull began to glow with soft amber light. Abby's breathing nearly stilled when the air hummed, as if the spirits themselves whispered to the wizard. The sorceress fussed with the beads at her neck. The mother confessor chewed her lower lip. Abby prayed. Wizard Zorander set the skull on the table and turned his back on them. The amber glow faded away. When he said nothing, Abby spoke into the thick silence. Well, are you satisfied? Did your test prove it a debt true? Oh, yes, he said quietly without turning toward them. It is a debt of bones true, bound by the magic invoked until the debt is paid. Abby's fingers worried at the frayed edge of her sack. I told you. My mother wouldn't have lied to me. She told me that if not paid while she was alive, it became a debt of bones upon her death. The wizard slowly rounded to face her. And did she tell you anything of the engendering of the debt? No. Abby cast a furtive, sidelong glance at Delora before going on. Sorceresses hold secrets close and reveal only that which serves their purposes. With a slight, fleeting smile, he grunted his concurrence. She said only that it was your father and she who were bound in it, and that until paid it would continue to pass on to the descendants of each. Your mother spoke the truth, but that does not mean that it must be paid now. It is a solemn debt of bones! Abby's frustration and fear erupted with venom. I declare it to you! You will yield to the obligation! Both the sorceress and the mother confessor gazed off at the walls, uneasy at a woman, an ungifted woman, raising her voice to the first wizard himself. Abby suddenly wondered if she might be struck dead for such insolence. But if he didn't help her, it wouldn't matter. The mother confessor diverted the possible results of Abby's outburst with a question. Zed, did your reading tell you of the nature of the engendering of debt? Indeed it did, he said. My father, too, told me of a debt. My test has proven to me that this is the one of which he spoke, and that the woman standing before me carries the other half of the link. So, what was the engendering? The sorceress asked. He turned his palms up. It seems to have slipped my mind. I'm sorry. I find myself to be more forgetful than usual of late. Dolores sniffed. And you dare to call sorceresses taciturn. Wizard Zorander silently considered her a moment, and then turned a squint on the mother confessor. The council wants it done, do they? He smiled a sly smile. Then it shall be done. The mother confessor cocked her head. Zed, are you sure about this? About what? Abby asked. Are you going to honor the debt or not? The wizard shrugged. You have declared the debt due. He plucked a small book from the table and slipped it into a pocket in his robe. Who am I to argue? Dear spirits, the mother confessor whispered to herself. Zed, just because the council... I am just a wizard, he said, cutting her off, serving the wants and wishes of the people. But if you travel to this place, you would be exposing yourself to needless danger. I must be near the border, or it will claim parts of the Midlands, too. Coney Crossing is as good a place as any other to ignite the conflagration. Beside herself with relief, Abby was hardly hearing anything else he said. Thank you, Wizard Zorander. Thank you. He strode around the table and gripped her shoulder with stick-like fingers of surprising strength. We are bound, you and I, in a debt of bones. Our life paths have intersected. His smile looked at once sad and sincere. His powerful fingers closed around her wrist, around her bracelet, and he put her mother's skull in her hands. Please, Abby, call me Zed. Near tears, she nodded. Thank you. Zed. Outside in the early light, they were accosted by the waiting crowd. Wizard Thomas, waving his papers, shoved his way through. Zorander, I've been studying these elements you provided. I have to talk to you. Talk then, the first wizard said as he marched by. The crowd followed in his wake. This is madness! I never said it wasn't. Wizard Thomas shook the papers as if for proof. You can't do this, Zorander! The council has decided that it is to be done. The war must be ended while we have the upper hand and before Panis Raal comes up with something we won't be able to counter. No, I mean I've studied this thing and you won't be able to do it. We don't understand the power those wizards wielded. I've looked over the elements you've shown me. Even trying to invoke such a thing will create intense heat. Zed halted and put his face close to Thomas. He lifted his eyebrows in mock surprise. Really, Thomas? Do you think? Igniting a light spell that will rip the fabric of the world of life might cause an instability in the elements of the web field? Thomas charged after as Zed stormed off. Zorander, you won't be able to control it. If you were able to invoke it, and I'm not saying I believe you can, you would breach the grace. The invocation uses heat. The breach feeds it. You won't be able to control the cascade. No one can do such a thing. I can do it, the first wizard muttered. Thomas shook the fists of papers in a fury. Zorander, your arrogance will be the end of us all. Once parted, the veil will be rent and all life will be consumed.
I demand to see the book in which you found this spell. I demand to see it myself, the whole thing, not just parts of it.
The first wizard paused and lifted a finger. Thomas, if you were meant to see the book, then you would be first wizard and have access to the first wizard's private enclave. But you are not, and you don't. Thomas's face glowed scarlet above his white beard.
This is a foolhardy act of desperation.
Wizard Zorander flicked the finger. The papers flew from the old wizard's hand and swirled up into a whirlwind, there to ignite, flaring into ashes that lifted away on the wind. Sometimes, Thomas, all that is left to you is an act of desperation. I am first wizard, and I will do as I must. That is the end of it. I will hear no more. He turned and snatched the sleeve of an officer. Alert the lancers. Gather all the cavalry available. We ride for Penderson Reach at once. The man thumped a quick salute to his chest before dashing off. Another officer, older and looking to be of much higher rank, cleared his throat. Wizard Zorander, may I know of your plan? It is Anarcho, the first wizard said, who is the right hand of Panis Rahl, and in conjunction with Rahl conjures death to stalk us. Quite simply put, I intend to send death back at them. By leading the lancers into Penderson Reach. Yes, Anarcho holds at Coney Crossing. We have General Brainerd driving north toward Penderson Reach, General Sanderson sweeping south to join with him, and Mardale charging up from the southwest. We will go in there with the lancers and whoever of the rest of them is able to join with us. Anarcho is no fool. We don't know how many other wizards and gifted he has with him, but we know what they're capable of. They've bled us time and time again. At last we have dealt them a blow. The officer chose his words carefully. Why do you think they wait? Why wouldn't they simply slip back into Dara? Zed rested a hand on the crenellated wall and gazed out on the dawn, out on the city below. Anarcho relishes the game. He performs it with high drama. He wants us to think them wounded. Penderson Reach is the only terrain in all those mountains that an army can get through with any speed. Coney Crossing provides a wide field for battle, but not wide enough to let us maneuver easily or flank them. He is trying to bait us in. The officer didn't seem surprised. But why? Zed looked back over his shoulder at the officer. Obviously, he believes that in such terrain he can defeat us. I believe otherwise. He knows that we can't allow the menace to remain there, and he knows our plans. He thinks to draw me in, kill me, and end the threat I alone hold over them. So, the officer reasoned aloud, you are saying that for Anarcho it is worth the risk. Zed stared out once more at the city below the wizard's keep. If Anarcho is right, he could win it all at Coney Crossing. When he has finished me, he will turn his gifted loose, slaughter the bulk of our forces all in one place, and then, virtually unopposed, cut out the heart of the Midlands. Idendrill. Anarcho plans that before the snow flies, he will have killed me, annihilated our joint forces, have the people of the Midlands in chains, and be able to hand the whip to Panis Rahl. The officer stared, dumbfounded. And you plan to do as Anarcho is hoping, and go in there to face him? Zed shrugged. What choice have I? And do you at least know how Anarcho plans to kill you, so that we might take precautions, take countermeasures? I'm afraid not. Vexed, he waved his hand, dismissing the matter. He turned to Abby. The lancers have swift horses. We will ride hard. We will be to your home soon. We will be there in time. And then we'll see to our business. Abby only nodded. She couldn't put into words the relief of her petition granted, nor could she express the shame she felt to have her prayer answered. But most of all, she couldn't utter a word of her horror at what she was doing, for she knew of the Darren's plan. Flies swarmed around dried scraps of viscera, all that was left of Abby's prized bearded pigs. Apparently, even the breeding stock, which Abby's parents had given her as a wedding gift, had been slaughtered and taken. Abby's parents, too, had chosen Abby's husband. Abby had never met him before. He came from the town of Linford, where her mother and father bought the pigs. Abby had been beside herself with anxiety over who her parents would choose for her husband. She had hoped for a man who would be of good cheer, a man to bring a smile to the difficulties of life. When she first saw Philip, she thought he must be the most serious man in all the world. His young face looked to her as if it had never once smiled. That first night after meeting him, she had cried herself to sleep over thoughts of sharing her life with so solemn a man. She thought her life caught up on the sharp tines of grim fate. Abby came to find that Philip was a hard-working man who looked out at life through a great grin. That first day she had seen him, she only later learned, he had been putting on his most sober face so that his new family would not think him a slacker, unworthy of their daughter. In a short time, Abby had come to know that Philip was a man upon whom she could depend. By the time Jana had been born, she had come to love him. Now Philip, and so many others, depended upon her. Abby brushed her hands clean after putting her mother's bones to rest once more. The fences Jana had watched Philip so often mend, she saw, were all broken down. Coming back around the house, she noticed that the barn doors were missing. Anything an animal or human could eat was gone. Abby could not recall having ever seen her home looking so barren. It didn't matter, she told herself. It didn't matter. If only Jana would be returned to her. Fences could be mended. Pigs could be replaced. Somehow, someday. Jana could never be replaced. Abby, Zed asked as he peered around at the ruins of her home, how is it that you weren't taken when your husband and daughter and everyone else were? Abby stepped through the broken doorway, thinking that her home had never looked so small. Before she had gone to Idendrill, to the Wizard's Keep, her home had seemed as big as anything she could imagine. Here, Philip had laughed and filled the simple room with his comfort and conversation. With charcoal, he had drawn animals on the stone hearth for Jana. Abby pointed. Under that door is the root cellar. That's where I was when I heard the things I told you about. Zed ran the toe of his boot across the knot hole used as a finger hold to lift the latch. They were taking your husband and your daughter, and you stayed down there. While your daughter was screaming for you, you didn't run up to help her. Abby summoned her voice. I knew that if I came up, they would have me too. I knew that the only chance my family had was if I waited and then went for help. My mother always told me that even a sorceress was no more than a fool if she acted one. She always told me to think things through first. Wise advice. Zed set down a ladle that had been bent and holed. He rested a gentle hand on her shoulder. It would have been hard to leave your daughter crying for you and do the wise thing. Abby could only manage a whisper. You speak the spirit's own truth. She pointed through the window on the side wall. That way, across the Coney River, lies town. They took Jana and Philip with them as they went on to take all the people from town. They had others, too, that they had already captured. The army set up camp in the hills beyond. Zed stood at the window, gazing out at the distant hills. Soon I hope this war will be ended. Dear spirits, let it end. Remembering the Mother Confessor's admonition not to repeat the story she told, Abby never asked about the wizard's daughter or murdered wife. When on their swift journey back to Coney Crossing, she spoke of her love for Jana, it must have broken his heart to think of his own daughter in the brutal hands of the enemy, knowing that he had left her to death, lest many more die. Zed pushed open the bedroom door. And back here? He asked as he put his head into the room beyond. Abby looked up from her thoughts. The bedroom. In the rear is a door back to the garden and the barn. Though he never once mentioned his dead wife or missing daughter, Abby's knowledge of them ate away at her like a swelling spring river ate at a hole in the ice. Zed stepped back in from the bedroom as Delora came silently slipping in the front doorway. As Abigail said, the town across the river has been sacked, the sorceress reported. From the looks of it, the people were all taken. Zed brushed back his wavy hair. How close is the river? Abby gestured out the window. Night was falling. Just there, a walk of 5 minutes. In the valley, on its way to join the Kern, the Coney River slowed and spread wide, so that it became shallow enough to cross easily. There was no bridge. The road simply led to the river's edge and took up again on the other side. Though the river was near to a quarter mile across in most of the valley, it was in no place much more than knee-deep. Only in the spring melt was it occasionally treacherous to cross. The town of Coney Crossing was 2 miles beyond, up on the rise of hills, safe from spring floods, as was the knoll where Abby's farmyard stood. Zed took Delora by the elbow. Ride back and tell everyone to hold station. If anything goes wrong, then they must attack. Anargo's legion must be stopped, even if they have to go into Dara after them. Delora did not look pleased. Before we left, the Mother Confessor made me promise that I would be sure that you were not left alone. She told me to see to it that gifted were always near if you needed them. Abby, too, had heard the Mother Confessor issue the orders. Looking back at the keep as they had crossed the stone bridge, Abby had seen the Mother Confessor up on a high rampart, watching them leave. The Mother Confessor had helped when Abby had feared all was lost. She wondered what would become of the woman. Then she remembered she didn't have to wonder. She knew. The wizard ignored what the sorceress had said. As soon as I help Abby, I'll send her back too. I don't want anyone near when I unleash the spell. Delora gripped his collar and pulled him close. She looked as if she might be about to give him a heated scolding. Instead, she drew him into an embrace. "Please, Zed," she whispered. "Don't leave us without you as first wizard." Zed smoothed back her dark hair. "And abandon you all to Thomas?" he smirked. "Never." The dust from Delora's horse drifted away into the gathering darkness as Zed and Abby descended the slope toward the river. Abby led him along the path through the tall grasses and rushes, explaining that the path would offer them better concealment than the road. Abby was thankful that he didn't argue for the road. Her eyes darted from the deep shadows on one side to the shadows on the other, as they were swallowed into the brush. Her pulse raced. She flinched whenever a twig snapped underfoot. It happened as she feared it would, as she knew it would. A figure enfolded in a long hooded cloak darted out of nowhere, knocking Abby aside. She saw the flash of a blade as Zed flipped the attacker into the brush. He squatted, putting a hand back on Abby's shoulder as she lay in the grass, panting. "Stay down," he whispered urgently. Light gathered at his fingers. He was conjuring magic. That was what they wanted him to do. Tears welled, burning her eyes. She snatched his sleeve. "Zed, don't use magic." She could hardly speak past the tightening pain in her chest. "Don't." The figure sprang again from the gloom of the bushes. Zed threw up a hand. The night lit with a flash of hot light that struck the cloaked figure. Rather than the assailant going down, it was Zed who cried out and crumpled to the ground. Whatever he had thought to do to the attacker, it had been turned back on him, and he was in the grip of the most terrible anguish, preventing him from rising or speaking. That was why they had wanted him to conjure magic, so they could capture him. The figure standing over the wizard glowered at Abby. "Your part here is finished. Go." Abby scuttled into the grass. The woman pushed the hood back and cast off her cloak. In the near darkness, Abby could see the woman's long braid and red leather uniform. It was one of the women Abby had been told about, the women used to capture those with magic, the Moored Sith. The Moored Sith watched with satisfaction as the wizard at her feet writhed in choking pain. "Well, well, looks like the first wizard himself has just made a very big mistake." The belts and straps of her red leather uniform creaked as she leaned down toward him, grinning at his agony. I have been given the whole night to make you regret ever having lifted a finger to resist us. In the morning, I'm to allow you to watch as our forces annihilate your people. Afterward, I am to take you to Lord Rahl himself, the man who ordered the death of your wife, so you can beg him to order me to kill you, too. She kicked him. So you can beg Lord Rahl for your death, as you watch your daughter die before your eyes. Zed could only scream in horror and pain. On her hands and knees, Abby crabbed her way farther back into the weeds and rushes. She wiped at her eyes, trying to see. She was horrified to witness what was being done to the man who had agreed to help her for no more reason than a debt to her mother. By contrast, these people had coerced her service by holding hostage the life of her child. As she backed away, Abby saw the knife the Mord Sith had dropped when Zed had thrown her into the weeds. The knife was a pretext, used to provoke him to act. It was magic that was the true weapon. The Mord Sith had used his own magic against him, used it to cripple and capture him, and now used it to hurt. It was the price demanded. Abby had complied. She had no choice. But what toll was she imposing on others? How could she save her daughter's life at the cost of so many others? Would Janna grow up to be a slave to people who would do this? With a mother who would allow it? Janna would grow up to learn to bow to Panis Rahl and his minions, to submit to evil, or worse, grow up to become a willing part of the scourge, never tasting liberty or knowing the value of honor. With dreadful finality, everything seemed to fall to ruin in Abby's mind. She snatched up the knife. Zed was wailing in pain as the Mord Sith bent, doing some foul thing to him. Before she had time to lose her resolve, Abby was moving toward the woman's back. Abby had butchered animals. She told herself that this was no different. These were not people, but animals. She lifted the knife. A hand clamped over her mouth. Another seized her wrist. Abby moaned against the hand, against her failure to stop this madness when she had had the chance. A mouth close to her ear urged her to hush. Struggling against the figure in hooded cloak that held her, Abby turned her head as much as she could, and in the last of the daylight, saw violet eyes looking back. For a moment she couldn't make sense of it, couldn't make sense of how the woman could be there when Abby had seen her remain behind. But it truly was her. Abby stilled. The mother confessor released her, and with a quick hand signal urged her back. Abby didn't question. She scurried back into the rushes as the mother confessor reached out toward the woman in red leather. The Mord Sith was bent over, intent on her grisly business with the screaming wizard. In the distance, bugs chirped and clicked. Frogs called with insistent croaks. Not far away, the river sloshed and burbled as it always did, a familiar, comforting sound of home. And then there came a sudden, violent concussion to the air. Thunder without sound. It drove the wind from Abby's lungs. The wallop nearly knocked her senseless, making every joint in her body burn in sharp pain. There was no flash of light, just that pure and flawless jolt to the air. The world seemed to stop in its terrible splendor. Grass flattened, as if in a wind radiating out in a ring from the Mord Sith and the Mother Confessor. Abby's senses returned as the pain in her joints thankfully melted away. Abby had never seen it done before, and had never expected to see it in the whole of her life. But she knew, without doubt, that she had just witnessed a confessor unleashing her power. From what Abby's mother had told her, it was the destruction of a person's mind so complete that it left only numb devotion to the confessor. She had but to ask, and they would confess any truth, no matter the crime they had previously attempted to conceal or deny. "Mistress," the Mord Sith moaned in piteous lamentation, Abby, first staggered by the shock of the soundless thunder of the Mother Confessor's power, and now stunned by the abject anguish of the woman crumpled on the ground, felt a hand grip her arm. It was the wizard. With the back of his other hand, he wiped blood from his mouth. He labored to get his breath. Leave her to it. Zed, I'm so sorry. I tried to tell you not to use magic, but I didn't call loud enough for you to hear. He managed to smile through obvious pain. I heard you. But why then did you use your gift? I thought that in the end you would not be the kind of person to do such a terrible thing, and that you would show your true heart. He pulled her away from the cries. We used you. We wanted them to think they had succeeded.
You knew what I was going to do? You knew I was to bring you to them so that they could capture you?
I had a good idea. From the first, there seemed more to you than you presented. You are not very talented at being a spy and a traitor. Since we arrived here, you've been watching the shadows and jumping at the chirp of every bug. The Mother Confessor rushed up. Zed, are you all right? He put a hand on her shoulder. I'll be fine. His eyes still held the glaze of terror. Thank you for not being late. For a moment I feared.
I know.
The Mother Confessor offered a quick smile. Let us hope your trick was worth it. You have until dawn. She said they expect her to torture you all night before bringing you to them in the morning. Their scouts alerted Anargo to our troops' arrival. Back in the rushes, the moored Sith was screaming as though she were being flayed alive. Shivers ran through Abby's shoulders. They'll hear her and know what's happened. Even if they could hear at this distance, they will think it is Zed being tortured by her. The Mother Confessor took the knife from Abby's hand. I am glad that you rewarded my faith, and in the end chose not to join with them. Abby wiped her palms on her skirts, shamed by all she had done, by what she had intended to do. She was beginning to shake. Are you going to kill her? The Mother Confessor, despite looking bone-weary after having touched the moored Sith, still had iron resolve in her eyes. A moored Sith is different from anyone else. She does not recover from the touch of a confessor. She would suffer in profound agony until she dies, sometime before morning. She glanced back toward the cries. She has told us what we need to know, and Zed must have his power back. It is the merciful thing to do. It also buys me time to do what I must do. Zed's fingers turned Abby's face toward him, away from the shrieks. And time to get Janna back. You will have until morning.
I will have until morning? What do you mean?
I'll explain. But we must hurry if you are to have enough time. Now, take off your clothes. Abby was running out of time. She moved through the Darren camp, holding herself stiff and tall, trying not to look frantic, even though that was how she felt. All night long she had been doing as the wizard had instructed, acting haughty. To anyone who noticed her, she directed disdain. To anyone who looked her way, thinking to speak to her, she growled. Not that many, though, so much as dared to catch the attention of what appeared to be a red leather-clad moored Sith. Zed had told her, too, to keep the moored Sith's weapon in her fist. It looked like nothing more than a small red leather rod. How it worked, Abby had no idea. The wizard had said only that it involved magic, and she wouldn't be able to call it to her aid. But it did have an effect on those who saw it in her hand. It made them melt back into the darkness, away from the light of the campfires, away from Abby. Those who were awake, anyway. Although most people in the camp were sleeping, there was no shortage of alert guards. Zed had cut the long braid from the moored Sith who had attacked him and tied it into Abby's hair. In the dark, the mismatch of color wasn't obvious. When the guards looked at Abby, they saw a moored Sith and quickly turned their attention elsewhere. By the apprehension on people's faces when they saw her coming, Abby knew she must look fearsome. They didn't know how her heart pounded. She was thankful for the mantle of night, so that the Darrens couldn't see her knees trembling. She had seen only two real Mord Sith, both sleeping, and she had kept far away from them, as Zed had warned her. Real Mord Sith were not likely to be fooled so easily. Zed had given her until dawn. Time was running out. He had told her that if she wasn't back in time, she would die. Abby was thankful she knew the lay of the land, or long since she would have become lost among the confusion of tents, campfires, wagons, horses, and mules. Everywhere pikes and lances were stacked upright in circles with their points leaning together. Men, farriers, fletchers, blacksmiths, and craftsmen of all sorts worked through the night. The air was thick with wood smoke and rang with the sound of metal being shaped and sharpened and wood being worked for everything from bows to wagons. Abby didn't know how people could sleep through the noise, but sleep they did. Shortly, the immense camp would wake to a new day, a day of battle, a day the soldiers went to work doing what they did best. They were getting a good night's sleep, so they would be rested for the killing of the Midland army. From what she had heard, Darren soldiers were very good at their job. Abby had searched relentlessly, but she had been unable to find her father, her husband, or her daughter. She had no intention of giving up. She had resigned herself that if she didn't find them, she would die with them. She had found captives tied together and staked to trees or the ground to keep them from running. Many more were chained. Some she recognized, but many more she didn't. Most were kept in groups and under guard. Abby never once saw a guard asleep at his post. When they looked her way, she acted as if she were looking for someone, and she wasn't going to go easy on them when she found them. Zed had told her that her safety and the safety of her family depended on her playing the part convincingly. Abby thought about these people hurting her daughter, and it wasn't hard to act angry. But she was running out of time. She couldn't find them, and she knew that Zed would not wait. Too much was at stake. She understood that now. She was coming to appreciate that the wizard and the mother confessor were trying to stop a war, that they were people resolved to the dreadful task of weighing the lives of a few against the lives of many. Abby lifted another tent flap and saw soldiers sleeping. She squatted and looked at the faces of prisoners tied to wagons. They stared back with hollow expressions. She bent to gaze at the faces of children pressed together in nightmares. She couldn't find Dranna. The huge camp sprawled across the hilly countryside. There were 1,000 places she could be. As she marched along a crooked line of tents, she scratched at her wrist. Only when she went farther did she notice that it was the bracelet warming that made her wrist itch. It warmed yet more as she proceeded, but then the warmth began fading. Her brow twitched. Out of curiosity, she turned and went back the way she had come, where a pathway between tents turned off. Her bracelet tingled again with warmth. Abby paused a moment, looking off into the darkness. The sky was just beginning to color with light. She took the path between the tents, following until the bracelet cooled, then backtracked to where it warmed again, and took a new direction where it warmed yet more. Abby's mother had given her the bracelet, telling her to wear it always, and that someday it would be of value. Abby wondered if somehow the bracelet had magic that would help her find her daughter. With dawn nearing, this seemed the only chance she had left. She hurried onward, wending where the warmth from the bracelet directed. The bracelet led her to an expanse of snoring soldiers. There were no prisoners in sight. Guards patrolled the men in bedrolls and blankets. There was one tent set among the big men, for an officer, she guessed. Not knowing what else to do, Abby strode among the sleeping men. Near the tent, the bracelet sent tingling heat up her arm. Abby saw that sentries hung around the small tent like flies around meat. The canvas sides glowed softly, probably from a candle inside. Off to the side, she noticed a sleeping form different from the men. As she got closer, she saw that it was a woman. Mariska. The old woman breathed with a little raspy whistle as she slept. Abby stood paralyzed. Guards looked up at her. Needing to do something before they asked any questions, Abby scowled at them and marched toward the tent. She tried not to make any noise. The guards might think she was a moored Sith, but Mariska would not long be fooled. A glare from Abby turned the guards' eyes to the dark countryside. Her heart pounding nearly out of control, Abby gripped the tent flap. She knew Janna would be inside. She told herself that she must not cry out when she saw her daughter. She reminded herself that she must put a hand over Janna's mouth before she could cry out with joy, lest they be caught before they had a chance to escape. The bracelet was so hot it felt as if it would blister her skin. Abby ducked into the low tent. A trembling little girl huddled in a tattered wool cloak sat in blankets on the ground. She stared up with big eyes that blinked with the terror of what might come next. Abby felt a stab of anguish. It was not Janna. They stared at each other, this little girl and Abby. The child's face was lit clearly by the candle set to the side, as Abby's must be. In those big gray eyes that looked to have beheld unimaginable terrors, the little girl seemed to reach a judgment. Her arms stretched up in supplication. Instinctively, Abby fell to her knees and scooped up the little girl, hugging her small, trembling body. The girl's spindly arms came out from the tattered cloak and wrapped around Abby's neck, holding on for dear life. "Help me, please," the child whimpered in Abby's ear. Before she had picked her up, she had seen the face in the candlelight. There was no doubt in Abby's mind. It was Zed's daughter. "I've come to help you," Abby comforted. "Zed sent me." The child moaned expectantly. Abby held the girl out at arm's length. "I'll take you to your father, but you mustn't let these people know I'm rescuing you. Can you play along with me? Can you pretend that you're my prisoner, so that I can get you away?" Near tears, the girl nodded. She had the same wavy hair as Zed, and the same eyes, although they were an arresting gray, not hazel. "Good," Abby whispered, cupping a chilly cheek, almost lost in those gray eyes. "Trust me, then, and I will get you away." "I trust you," came the small voice. Abby snatched up a rope lying nearby and looped it around the girl's neck. "I'll try not to hurt you, but I must make them think you are my prisoner." The girl cast a worried look at the rope, as if she knew the rope well, and then nodded that she would go along. Abby stood once outside the tent, and by the rope pulled the child out after her. The guards looked her way. Abby started out. One of them scowled as he stepped close. "What's going on?" Abby stomped to a halt and lifted the red leather rod, pointing it at the guard's nose. "She has been summoned. And who are you to question? Get out of my way or I'll have you gutted and cleaned for my breakfast." The man paled and hurriedly stepped aside. Before he had time to reconsider, Abby charged off, the girl in tow at the end of the rope, dragging her heels, making it look real. No one followed. Abby wanted to run, but she couldn't. She wanted to carry the girl, but she couldn't. It had to look as if a moored Sith was taking a prisoner away. Rather than take the short route back to Zed, Abby followed the hills upriver to a place where the trees offered concealment almost to the water's edge. Zed had told her where to cross and warned her not to return by a different way. He had set traps of magic to prevent the Darrens from charging down from the hills to stop whatever it was he was going to do. Closer to the river, she saw, downstream a ways, a bank of fog hanging close to the ground. Zed had emphatically warned her not to go near any fog. She suspected it was a poison cloud of some sort that he had conjured. The sound of the water told her she was close to the river. The pink sky provided enough light to finally see it when she reached the edge of the trees. Although she could see the massive camp on the hills in the distance behind her, she saw no one following. Abby took the rope from the child's neck. The girl watched her with those big round eyes. Abby lifted her and held her tight.
Hold on, and keep quiet.
Pressing the girl's head to her shoulder, Abby ran for the river.